Sean Birdsong here, Sharon Let Alon. Welcome to another edition of Beyond the Court. Today we have a special, special guest with us. We have president of Crowder Financial Group, a 14-year NBA and European professional basketball player, and the father of NBA player, Mr. Jay Crowder. Mr. Corey Crowder, what's going on, sir?
Hey, how you doing? Thanks for having me, Sean.
Doing great. Doing great. Appreciate you coming on this morning. Now, I got to ask, you know, I looked at your shirt. You know, can you explain what you're wearing? Is that a trying to see the writing on it? What does your shirt say?
This is a Boss Man original.
Okay.
It says, I can't read it. Maybe you can read it for me because I can't read it backwards if I look at it.
You scoot back a little
you
bit.
You can't see it either.
You only missed the shots.
Don't worry about it.
You only miss the shots you don't take. Okay. I like that.
Yeah. That's now, they can get that at bossman.com. That's Jay Crowder's clothing line.
Okay. All right. Now, you just left, you know, the finals. We've been talking to you, and, you know, they just wrapped up last week. What are your thoughts on the finals? And, you know, as a father, you know, I know you had to be very, very proud of your son, you know, achieving being a Western Conference champion and getting to the finals, and also, you know, continuing to average double figures during the season. You know, what were your thoughts on the overall season for him and also the finals?
You know, I was disappointed in the final, but overall on the season, as far as my point of view, I think it was a successful one for them. It was a great run. I am so exhausted. People ask me all the time, how are you holding up? You know, with the travel, supporting the ups and the downs, the excitement, the heartbreak. It's a rough ride. It was awesome. I think Jay played very good all season. I wish that they would have had a different outcome and mm-hmm. won the thing. I personally wanted a ring for myself. If I had to buy it myself, I was going to do that, but I wanted a ring selfishly for myself. But for them, I'm very happy for them, for the organization, for the ownership, for management, for the coaches. I know if it was a crazy ride for me, I can only imagine what they were going through. Mm-hmm. So all in all, you know, we came up a little short. You know, the better team won. I thought that, you know, going up 2-0 with home court advantage and everybody was healthy, that I sure thought that we had this in the bag. You know, Dennis Atabatumpo thought otherwise, and he showed up, and they won, and I want to congratulate them on winning and the city of Milwaukee for being able to celebrate this championship.
Right. Now, we're going to talk more, you know, about you, your family here in a little bit, but I want to take it back a little bit and talk about you know, you're from Carrollton, Georgia. What was your upbringing like, you know, in Carrollton, Georgia, you know, in the Crowder household when you were growing up?
Oh, man, it was six of us. My mother worked two jobs to support us. It was hard, but it wasn't that bad. You know, we went without a lot of things, but she made sure that we had everything we needed. So, you know, living now as an adult, I can understand what she meant by, you know, you got everything you need, yeah. even though sometimes you want a little bit more. you know, growing up in Carrollton is a small town. Like I told you before, football was my first love. I played basketball, but I loved football until I was in the ninth grade. And there was a decision made where I couldn't do what I wanted to do in football. So I gave up football and I concentrated on basketball every day. I tell people all the time, there are so many great athletes that come out of Carrollton, Georgia, and I'm sure every small town can relate to that, but I got a chance to see all that stuff firsthand. I mean, we had track meets where, if you got up out of your seat in that stadium, somebody else is going to feel it. And that's how great the athletes were coming out of there. You know, basketball sort of takes a back seat to football there in that town. But I was able to, from the day I decided to stop playing football until I decided to really go into basketball and concentrate and make it, you know, my thing, so to speak. that's all I did every day. Every day I did it. I did it until my confidence got up, until I got better and better. And I was able to formulate that into a scholarship to the great Kentucky Wesleyan College, the best school ever, by the way. And the rest is history, so to speak.
So, Curry, that's good to hear. So you said basketball came into, when did it come into picture? You could you elaborate on that? What made you go to it? You said that a lot of people there were football. So what really made that switch to basketball for you?
Well, I always played football. I always played basketball too. But football, I thought I really was good at football. I could throw the ball a country mile, we say. But I went to my coaches. I was growing, and I said, "Hey, I don't want to run the ball anymore. I want to throw the ball and play defensive back." And they said, "No, you can't do that." And I said, "Well, no, I'm not going to play." And I quit, and I never looked back.
Why would they say?
I mean, look. This is my body, right. And if I'm not happy doing what I want to do, why do it? And I say that to anybody out there. If you're not happy with what you want to get out of it, then why don't do it? You can't do that for somebody else. So I felt that they're telling me that I couldn't do this, what I wanted to do. And I said, "Hey, you guys made the choice. I didn't make the choice." Okay. And so after that, I played basketball every single day until I got better and better. And then my confidence grew. And then I was able to get a scholarship as my body was forming, and that's it.
Did they ever tell you why they thought that they didn't want you to play that position?
Well, you don't get to question the coaches, the head coach and your position coach as to why. You only do what you're told to do. But in other words, you do it, you shut up and you play. And I said, no, I don't have to do that. They're not going to give you an explanation when they're in charge. They don't have to. They don't owe me anything. And likewise, I don't owe them anything.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's good to say. I think there's been a shift now with this generation. They more, you know, we were brought up to, your mom said this and you don't say why. You just do as you're told. But I think it's a blessing. Sometimes it could be a curse with this generation that they do question. I like that they question why, like not go to status norm, but however, you know, it's also, even when you're given it as a parent, you know what I mean? Like, you know, the authority says, "Well, I said no because of this." That right. is a complete different from how you, like you just expressed, you know? Coach told me, "No, I can't play this position," and I went on, but I'm sure your son and some of the other athletes today, they're like, "No, I don't want to do this." And I was
confident, Sharon, in the consequences of my decision. Okay. I was confident in I'm making the right decision for me, regardless of whatever is going to happen. Mm-hmm. If I didn't make it to the NBA, I didn't care. I didn't like the part of them telling me I have to do something I don't want to do in order for me to be on that field. And I said, no, that there's got to be a better way. And to make it even worse, my position coach was the head basketball coach.
Oh, great. So he knew you were in trouble.
But, no, it wasn't trouble. See, check this out. We had such a different type of relationship back then. Even to this day at 52 years old, I'm still in contact with that man. And he calls me his son and I call him my father because that man kept me out of trouble. Whenever he told me, "I need to see you in my office," I knew, okay, what have I done? And I didn't have a father figure there. And he kept my feet to the fire. He saw something in me that he gave me that extra added attention that I wasn't getting at home, and my dad wasn't in my life. So he gave me that support that I needed to go on. But he never questioned my decision to quit football. Never, not one.
So you went into, from that, you went to college, Kentucky Western, where you inducted in 2014.
Sweetie, Kentucky Wesleyan College.
Wesleyan.
Sorry, I can't let you do that.
Excuse my Caribbean accent. Wesleyan. There's some, you know, nuances in the accent, okay? My Caribbean accent.
I got you, sweetie.
You were inducted in 2014, what made you choose that college?
That is an excellent, excellent question. I'm going to tell you something a lot of people don't know. My mother asked me, which one of those schools is the furthest away from home? And I said, the one in Kentucky. And she said, that's where you're going. And I said, why? She said, because if you cannot get back to me, you will grow up and it'll force you to become a man.
Interesting.
God honest truth.
Mothers know best, you see? So you grew up, got inducted, and all this history.
Very interesting.
Yep. That was the best decision I ever made.
Right. Now, while you were at Westland, you know, you were the accolades that you had being inducted into the Hall of Fame. You know, you were the first player in the college history to be National Player of the Year of any sport. You were a 3-time basketball All-American. You still hold the record at Wesleyan for most points scored, you know, over 2,000 points scored in the season. Also, you were Conference Player of the Year 2 times, and you also received, you were a member of a NCAA Division II championship team. With all those accolades, you know, did you ever, I won't say dream of that, but what were your thoughts after you completed what you did in college? Did you kind of like, you know, in your mind backtrack and say, dang, I came from Georgia. My mother wanted me to come, you know, get as far away from the house, and I was able to accomplish this in basketball at that school. What were your thoughts at that time?
Well, I only wanted to be the best basketball player I could be. I never dreamed that I could be in the NBA. Never, never, not once. Even to this day, I can pinch myself to know that I played in the NBA. The only thing, Sean, that I can tell you is I worked very hard. Until the day I retired, I grew up in the projects. I ran from going back to the projects. So every time that I thought it was tough or I don't want to work out today or I don't feel like lifting my weights or running the miles or the steps in the stadium, I always thought back to, remember those days when you didn't have anything to eat or, you know, you had to share a bed with your brother or whatever all that stuff is. I ran from that. And that was the one driving force, the motivator that I needed inside of me to make sure in order for me to be able to better my life, then I had to keep going and keep pushing and to become better and better. All I wanted to do was to get a good degree, to get a good job. I never, ever fantasized that I would be a professional athlete. But once it came, I embraced it. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed every second of it. I mean, there were times when I wanted to give up. Coaches were hard. But every second of that lifestyle was meant for me to be in it. And I loved it.
Right. And, you know, you, after college, you end up signing with the Utah Jazz. You know, what was – I want to backtrack just a tiny bit. It's funny you say that. I think a lot of guys in your era, you know, we had Artis Gilmore on a few months back, and he talked about how at a young age he picked cotton as a young kid, and he did certain things like that, and he would just lay there and look in the sky and dream of something different. And then once you get to the point of being a professional or as athlete or any kind of business, your mindset is so that I'm going to be successful in my mind so much to where I'm not going to go back to where I came from. Do you agree that a lot of professional athletes, it's like, I don't want to say a killer instinct, but they have that motivational factor of I'm not going back to where I came from?
Absolutely. But it changes you if you had any type of hardship when you were young. I mean, all the great ones have something inside of them that drives them. I don't know what it is. For me, it was the projects. I can, to this day, I can still get those goosebumps thinking that we live there, you know? and that I wanted a better situation. But all the great athletes got something in them that's driving them. Mm-hmm. If you can talk to 100, and I guarantee you there's going to be a story, a person, a place, a thing, a situation. It's going to be something that's going to drive them to want more, to want to be better, to don't want to go back to. It could be in an abusive relationship, or a mother or father or somebody that was abusive, and they're out of that situation and they don't want to go back to it. So they're going to strive and drive themselves to be, you know, all they can be. And that was me. I mean, I to this day, I still have that drive, and I'm glad I grew up in that situation. I don't want to go back to it. Mm-hmm. You know, I had to tell my kids all the time, why are you trying to be that way? You never growed up in the project. You never experienced any of that. So we you know, and they say, well, you know, you're right. But all I can tell you is, if you talk to any person who's ever accomplished anything, there is something inside of them that's driving them, that's got that fire. And they're gonna explain it to you. You're gonna feel it, and maybe you guys have felt some of the same things. You know,
mm-hmm. I Corey, you're preaching well. Okay, because that's from the first time I met you years ago. Was it 15, 20 years ago I met you? As relatable as, you know, what you're saying here. You know, growing up, my mom was an immigrant from Trinidad. Brought the family up, brought me up, everybody else. And the drive that she had to, I would say, you know, I tell people, the kids, when we do the things, the clinics, and I tell Sean, and I pull one little girl aside that I could see that because sometimes struggling, and I make her sit at the front with me. And I'd let her know, you know, because they just see the success. I said, hey, you know what? My mom came from this, you know, small island in Trinidad with $20 in her pocket to be a domestic and leave her family. Mm. And it was that one person, when she came up and saw that she was so knowledgeable, you know, because we have the British system. So she was already high, even though like our high school in the British system is like college here in America. So the beauty of mm-hmm. that was that she brought everybody up, worked her butt, and at the end of the day, got me, went to private school, Catholic school in New York, went to the best college. She was going to college, you know, finishing up getting her degree in college while I was graduating from high school. I graduated from Ivy League, NYU, with honors, while she raised two girls in New York City. So wow. I'll say that is a testament. And what drives me to make the difference is the same story. I said, I know, my mom says, you always present yourself, you are worth a million. You may only have $2 in your pocket, but you have to have the million-dollar mentality.
Ooh, I like that. Okay? I like that.
So $2 doesn't matter. You have the million-dollar mentality, so that means you're going to sit down. I'm going to have a seat at the table. I don't want to speak to the millionaire. Like, I'm right at your level. I may not have to change it yet, but I have the mindset.
I get it. I tell my kids all the time, you know, success can be had by anybody if you want it. If you're willing to pay the price, if you're willing to put in the work. Mm-hmm. You know, I ran track when I was 12. My daughter, who just went to college, she was running track her 10th and 11th grade year. I'd go out and work out with her to put her through drills. I don't know anything about track, but it's the whole concept of she wanted to do it, and mm-hmm. I wanted to help her try to reach her dream. She was willing to put in the work. I was willing to put in my support system. If you give me that situation, somebody who wants to go and try to do something good, all they need is a little sprinkle on a little support, and they're going to be fine. Mm-hmm. And you know what? At the end of the day, she didn't continue to run track. We got out of it what she wanted to get out of it. And now she's moving on to another part of her life.
Right, right.
You know?
Now, you know, I want to switch gears and talk more about, you know, you and your family. You know, obviously, you know, your son followed in your footsteps. You know, you had a great career overseas and in the NBA, 14 years professionally. as your son and your daughter and everybody was coming up, did any of them look at you and say, I want to play basketball? Or was it something that you kind of just, they just found out on their own? And mm-hmm. what was it like for your kids growing up with you being a professional athlete and raising them and during that situation?
Well, my girls didn't really, they were young, so they didn't really, they saw me, but they didn't really pay attention. Jay, on the other hand, I used to, he would stay with his mom while I was overseas. And every summer I'd come home, he'd just spend all the summer with me. So I never pushed him into basketball. He was a football player too, but I never ever has pushed my kids into playing sports because I know what it takes if you for you to want to play, for you to want to be good. So, you know, for me to push them, it would have been for me. I needed them to do it for them.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like my daughter would ask me, Dad, will you come to the track today and work with me on long jump? She asked me to go, so I would go and do that because that was for her. Now, if it would have been a different thing if I would have said, hey, I'm coming to your practice today and we're going to work on long jump. See the difference?
Yeah. Right.
See, now I'm doing it. She's doing this for me. I wanted my kids, whatever they do in life, whether it be basketball, football, they want to, you know, one of my daughters, she has her own swimsuit line. Whatever these kids want to do, I support what they want to do. I never push my kids into playing sports because I know parents like that. And at the end of the day, you end up ruining your relationship with your kids.
Right.
You know, I said this on another Zoom call. You know, my first job is to be father, to be their dad.
Yeah.
My first job is not to be their coach.
Right.
You know, I don't talk basketball with Jay Crowder until Jay Crowder brings up basketball to me. Mm-hmm. After that game, he got home about 2:30 and I went ahead and went to sleep because I was tired. The next morning I woke up, he walks in. I walk up and I give him a hug. I didn't say nothing about basketball. It's not about basketball. And after we sat down and we had breakfast, we can talk basketball. But the first thing, I needed to console my son exactly. for what he just went through.
Right.
It wasn't about, oh man, I wish y'all would have done that. I wish this would have happened, that would have happened. That game's already passed. We can't change that. Right. We gotta move forward now. So in order to help him move forward, you know, we gotta first understand that you just went through something that's kind of not tragic, but it's something that hit him really hard. You know, we shared our tears, but then we pick ourselves back up and we put our shoes back on and we continue to go forward. But so I never really forced my kids to play any sports. Jay got basketball a little late, but when he decided to make that decision, then we went ahead and we ran with it.
I saw that's so wonderful, Corey. And I saw something, I forgot who said it was Devin Booker's talking about Kobe. And, you know, it just translates to what you said about the Mamba mentality, you know. All these guys have that. And, you know, their house has to be a winner and it also has to be a loser. But I like the term, they're both winners. You're both winners. Now, what do you have to do next year? You know, what can you improve to be winner number one? To me, that's what it is. It's winner number one and winner number two. There's no loser because you have already gotten there. And another thing I want to touch on with you is your professional, okay, businessman career. Because I like to, you know, you show the kids, we use basketball for education, just tell them through education, you can remove yourself from whatever situation. And I always love, mm-hmm. you know, saying, okay, this person played basketball, blah, blah, blah. You know, what do you do? Okay, I'm on my own business. I'm a financial consultant. They're like, wow. I said, education. So if you could tell a little bit about your professional side of how, when you went into being the business person and dealing with other businesses, raising money for businesses, capital, I mean, that all plays into the mentality. I said, may not be a millionaire, but I can sit at a table because I know what you want.
Well, I mean, absolutely. On the business side of things, you know, the first thing you got to do is you got to have people who like you, because if they don't like you, they're not going to do business with you. And I play a ton of golf, but if I can have a business person with me on a golf course, I learn so much about them. I'm not looking at their golf swing. I'm not looking at how they putt. What I'm trying to see is this the type of person that I want to enter into a business relationship with that's going to be for 10, 15, 20 years, you know? So I do that. And then when I talk to these kids, you know, as far as my business is, I've kind of evolved to where I do more consulting now, Sharon, like you, than I do any of the backbreaking work. You know, I've kind of formed my company to be as such. So, but what I try to do with these athletes is I'm trying my best to help them to break this cycle, because we have an 80% a rate of athletes that are broke after they dribble their last dribble, they pass their last ball, catch their last ball, hit their last home run, whatever it is. 80% of us would be broke. But, you know, the income is going up for these guys, but that statistic is not coming down. Mm-hmm. And 85% of them end up divorced. So you have the whole divorce mechanism, which also leads into the 80% of you being a bankrupt. You know, so first you have to get them to marry the right person. And they got to understand, don't enter into these relationships because her blue jeans look good, at, you know, that night you met her at the club. You know, come on now.
I know.
You know, you go out and you make $250 million, you got to give Uncle Sam his cut. But if she takes half of that, what do you have? Plus alimony and child support, you know? So I try to teach these guys, as many as I can, how to also run their business life outside of their personal and basketball life, because they all go together. If you're missing, if any one of those links are missing out, you're not a whole person, you know. Yeah. If you're a bad person and you got your wife at home, two girls on the road, that's not going to end well, you know. So I try to help these guys. I try to consult with them. I like working with their agents, their financial advisors, and also I love working with their parents and the girlfriend. You know, just so it's a team effort.
Yeah.
You cannot be in a team environment and then your home life is going to be an individual and solo. No. That's a team effort too. Everybody's got to be on the same page. Mm-hmm. You don't know how many, Sharon, you don't know how many parents and their kids, after they make it, they become estranged from each other, all because of money.
Yep.
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 It's a lot of them.
Yep.
Yeah.
And so if I can go in and I can show them and talk to them and help them have a successful life when they cannot play anymore, I've done my job.
I think you hit it on the head.
Yay.
I think you hit on the head perfectly, because I feel like you're in a unique situation, have played the game, you have a son playing, and you also trying to tell guys about business and finances. It's kind of like, you know, we talked to Kelly Oubre Sr. and Kelly Oubre Jr., you know, plays the Warriors. And I want to ask you if it's the same situation almost mentality-wise. He was like, look, I make all these decisions. I talk to them about this. I meet with the financial advisor. I meet with the agents. I'm hands-on with everything. Are you like that with Jay, because you understand what's going on and you want to make sure that you and your family stay intact and that he saves his finances?
Well, first of all, I don't make that decision to be involved with Jay. He asked me to take on these different roles. Okay. Yeah. So again, remember, if you go back and if I push my kids to do something, they're doing it for me. If he's an adult that I need to treat him as such, mm-hmm. then he's an adult. These are his finances. This is his bank account. That's his agent. And these are all his things that he's doing. So I can't interject myself into those things unless he wants me to be there. Right. And I think he wants me to be there because if he asks me to do something that's very, private, number one, that's going to be mm-hmm. something that's very, very important, then when it needs to get done and it needs to get done the right way, he knows that I'll do that.
When he comes to me,
then I can activate and get stuff done. And he doesn't, he can concentrate on his job and he doesn't have to worry about, oh my God, is this guy going to steal my money? Or is this payment that I asked him to make for me, is it going to be late? Or if I need my cars moved, are they going to be delivered on time? And you know, so I try to take that pressure off of him so he doesn't have to worry about it. And I can only do that when I know, when he knows he trusts me to get things done for him, because I may have to have access to his bank account. I may have to have access to his credit cards. So somebody has to do the right thing because it's the right thing to do, you know? So that's
100%.
Absolutely. And like you said, is a trust factor with kids, because they, even like I said, my two daughters, they're established themselves, 31 and 27. 27 tomorrow, Corey, the little one that you met.
Tell her happy birthday.
Okay, so what is interesting is that they know they can come, but if they come to me, I want to tell them how I'm used to doing things. As you know, one of the things which is also that line of the parent, you want to help them and then they don't want to listen to what you have to do. You know, so I'm like, if you want me to handle this, this is how I will handle it. And I give it to them that way. Then I said, now, so do you think you can handle it? They're like, no, mom, can you please do that for me? But
yeah.
I tell them the steps that needs to be. You know, and I also know when to pull back when they get the glazed look. You know, they ask me about investment. Mom's been, you know, finished by for 30 something years. All of a sudden they're like, I start speaking, you know, like I'm speaking to you about it. And we're like, and they get that glazed look like what?
Yeah, see, I had some partners. We were doing some investment things and I thought it was good enough for my son. I brought it to him. He never mentioned again. 5 years go by. And then he called me and said, hey, could you have the guy call me back? But I didn't push it. I didn't push it. Right. I didn't push it. I vetted it. I did it myself. Yeah. And I said, hey, I think this is something that can help you, you know, and I left it alone. And then after that, you know, 5 years went by and he came back and said, hey, could you ask this guy to give me a call? I said, yeah, sure.
His guy's still around. That's what you need to make sure.
See, they'll get it. And they'll get it when they get it, right?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
And I really commend you on how you raise your kids and all of that, especially you being a father to them. And it's very interesting that you say, you know, you don't push them, you know, you guide them, but you don't push them for your own personal gain. You know, I've seen a few interviews and press conferences where Jay has openly spoken about his mother and, you know, the family and everything like that, everything that happened. Can you talk more about the kind of impact that, you know, your wife and, you know, his mother had on him during a tough time?
Well, I mean, I got to give her credit even before that, because for the 12 years that I was in Europe, I was gone 10 months out of the year. So she practically raised him by herself. I mean, I had him during the summers. You know, I call every day, every week, but it's not the same. It's not the same as being there. So first of all, I take my hat off to her and I say thank you for everything that she did in raising him and getting him to where he's at. You know, the part of us going through the whole battle with her having cancer and passing away was very traumatic for him, and it was very difficult for me. We were not together at the time that she passed, but I can tell you this right here on this call today, that she was my best friend. I tell people all the time, I think we were better apart than we were together, you know, simply because we were, before she met anybody, she'd tell them, hey, my son's father is going to call at different, it could be any time of the day or night, and it's not going to be a problem. And we had that relationship where we just see something funny on Instagram and she'd pick up the phone and call and we just laugh and enjoy that. And I miss that. I miss that friendship, and I miss being a co-parent with her, because she did such a great job with him. And You know, what you see in Jay Crowder, I can tell you here today, it's all his mother. We used to fight every day, me and the mom, but who did he look like, me or her? And that was an ongoing thing, but it was all in jest, which is great. But I take my hat off to her because she did a bulk of the heavy lifting. I was there in support because I was in Europe. I cared for him in the summertime when I was home. But I take my hat off to Helen Thompson. She did it all.
And I really applaud that, you know, being a single mom, divorce. When you say that, I so relate it. I had told my ex-husband, I said, and we're like the modern family, I said, look, and I would tell anyone, I said, my kids have one father and that's it. He's always going to be in the life, you know, as a friend, as a mentor. Kids not listening, pick up the phone and say, hey, you know,
yeah.
I'm always a bad cop. It's time for you to be the bad cop, you know, the bad cop, you know. So, but it's, like I said, it's a unit. It's a partnership for life. When you have kids, you have a partnership for life. No matter where you go, she goes, you're partners with life. You know, you have one mother and one father. And how you establish that relationship for the kid that says, look, it may not work out as a couple, but we're not going to stop being your parents.
No.
You know? So you're going to have to.
There was one story. Mm-hmm. There was one story I shared, I brought back up with him the other day, because he thanked me for going through that whole, the whole playoff with him. And I said, hey, you remember one day? Because his mother, I think, was dating some guy. And every time that a guy comes in, now he's the new thing on the block. So that's all I would hear about this guy. So I think I got angry with that. And I said to him, you know, I never want to hear about another man. And I had to explain to him why. And I said to him, you know, you're going to have a long life. You're going to have many different changes. People are going to come. People are going to go. There's always going to be one constant thing in your life. One thing that's always going to be constant. That's going to be me. Mm-hmm. And so every day I wake up, I want to be a father to my kids. I want to be there. And for the life of me, I don't understand how fathers do not want to be in their kids' lives. I don't get it. My kids keep me young. I got an 11-year-old. And now, you know, we're going through all this stuff again. And I get such enjoyment, and we laugh and we joke and we go get ice cream and we do things together. Yeah. For the life of me, how a guy can go 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, a month without seeing their kids is beyond me. I don't understand that, because I just spent 3.5 weeks away, and now I got to get reacclimated with my kids, and we got to go get our routines back down again. And I just wish all the fathers out there that are not being fathers to their kids, you're the one missing out. Yes, the kids are missing you, and they're missing your guidance and leadership and being a parent. They're missing that, but you're missing the bigger picture. It is not them.
That's deep.
I applaud that, Chloe, especially within our culture, our communities of color. And I always tell you in my little post, I said, you're what a strong Black man and father looks like. And I say with 100% love and respect for you, because yes, I see the pictures with the kids and I said, you know, look to this. Yes, we've had challenges within communities of color, you know, that the absent father, but if you could be present, even yet being absent, you can be absent physically, but you can still be present. So there's a way you can still just be. And that's the education we try to, you know, I try to put out to preach. I said, look, I understand you may be miles away, mentally or physically, but you can still be present. Mm-hmm. So they know who their father. You only have one mom and one father. That's it.
I go to my kids' school so much, Sharon. I don't mean to cut you off. I'm at my kids' school so much. I don't even have to show my license to go in there. Oh, Ms. Crowder, we see you all the time. Well, you go ahead and go in. The father behind me, sorry, sir, I need to see your license. Like, you know? But they know. And then if something happens at school, they call me, even though mom is only 10 minutes down the road. But yeah. I have to be there. And the reason, and my father, to this day, the man never told me once that he loved me. I don't think he even knew when my birthday was, which is okay. I don't want nobody feeling sorry for me. Don't do that. Yeah. That's okay. But what he gave me is, and he didn't even know it, he gave me the power to say, I'm going to be a great father, and here's why. Because he's not, and I know it. All I got to do is do what he's not doing, and I'm going to be great at doing this. So I thank him for that. I thank him for not being there, because that showed me I needed to be there. To this day, Jay Crowder's 31 years old. We don't hang up the phone unless we can tell each other we love you. I love you, man. I love you, too. Before the game, Sharon, when he looked up in that crowd, this is our I love you salute. We pound our chest like this, and he know I got it. No matter what's going on the court, I got it. Right.
That's beautiful.
Now, that's beautiful. You know, with all your experience in business and sports and being a father, most importantly, what would be your message to youth coming up, hearing this podcast, and any advice for them going forward on how to live their life on a day-to-day?
I would tell them, can you hear me?
Yeah.
I would tell them, if you love the sport, give it your all. Do everything you can to be good at it, but do not neglect your education. Because if you got $200 million and you can't read a bank statement, you don't have $200 million because you're not going to have that, because some financial advisor is going to come in the door and steal the money, because you're not going to know how to read a profit and loss statement, or you're not even going to open the mail. So I would say, make sure you get some type of education. College is not for everybody. For the parents, I would say support your kids. Don't push them. Support them. There's a difference. Supporting means, hey, let's go, Bobby. You're going to have a great game. Good luck. Don't beat him over the brow because you're not his coach. Now, if you want to push him that way, you're going to end up ruining that relationship. I don't want any parent child to go through that. I've seen it. I continue to see it. Yeah. So, but for the kids, I would say work as hard as you can. You got to find something that drives you. You got to find something that motivates you. I don't know, man. All I can tell them is you got to work hard. You got to work hard at everything you do, relationships, your life, your sport, your job. Everything's you're going to be successful if you put hard work behind it.
Absolutely.
Right. Now, we always ask our guests this question, Mr. Crowder. It could be off the court, on the court. Mm-hmm. What does being an American baller mean to Mr. Corey Crowder?
Being an American baller to me is somebody who is dedicated to their craft, somebody who loves what they're doing, and somebody that will give 110%, not only on the court, but also to their teammates and also in their community.
Beautiful.
Well said.
Thank you. I have my little clap back.
You're welcome. Again, thank you guys for having me. I appreciate you.
No problem. I want to, again, thank you. And I know you, like I said, you've been back and forth. So finally, you can get some rest on your downtime now. But I want to thank you again for being on the cast. And hopefully we can bring you back on again when you have some time.
I will. Hey, I just got to give one more shout out to the guys at Black Bunny. That's Drew and Kevin. Y'all need to hit them up, okay?
All right. Will do. And get me my shirt. I'll wear it.
All right. I got you.
I appreciate it, Mr. Crowder. Thank you.
Good luck.